Welcome to the Northern Business Podcast, a regular discussion with people in the north of England who lead businesses, employ people, have new ideas to help the economy grow. Now, the Northern Business Podcast is produced by Recognition PR. We serve scores of companies in different sectors across the country, some of which occasionally contribute to this podcast. And we're sponsored by Virtue Motors, one of the top automotive retailers in the UK, with a network of dealerships representing some of the world's most popular brands. I'm Graham Robb. In the studio today, we have Carl Swansbury. Carl's head of corporate finance at Ryecroft Glenton. He's got his finger on the pulse of who's investing what, where. And Roy Sandbach. Now, Roy is former chair of the Northern Accelerator, and he's currently a board member at the National Centre for universities and businesses, a very important part of our economy if we're to look to the future. Down the line, we have Christina Geary, who's commercial director at BJSS, which is now part of CGI, a fantastic, brilliant and overarching consultancy firm, which is globally represented. Christina's spearheading CGI's new business unit, and it's in Leeds. Christina, welcome to the podcast. I'm going to start with you. You're down the line, but you're in Leeds. Why is a firm as big and as expansive as CGI in Leeds?
Well, I think probably it's fair to say that they can see the amount of potential that there is in the region. I think it's there's a really strong community feel, a real some headquartered businesses that are absolutely huge on a global scale. And but we think that businesses want to work with local people. They want to be where their work clients. They want to be able to be living in the same area. Having that face to face time is really important to be able to collaborate and innovate together. And Leeds was a region that was previously underrepresented by CGI. So BJSS as a business has had a really strong reputation in Leeds. So it made sense to combine the two together.
You see there, Roy, I got it off to a nice positive start by asking you that question, and it came in really positively. You know of CGI, you work in the university sector. To have a firm like that actually in the north of England, it's saying something about our economy.
Yeah, and in fact, the very interesting thing about CGI is that it's in multi-sectors. So it can bring lessons and learning from several different sectors together. I work directly with their VP of health and care, for example. So their breadth is to their advantage. Their breadth from the point of view of scale across the globe is also to their advantage. So sectoral breadth and geographical breadth, fantastic thing. Now, great for innovation generally, by the way.
And Carl, you represent a professional firm, Ryecroft Glenton. It's accountancy by practice, but you're in the corporate finance. You're putting deals together.
Correct.
And I suppose professional firms' presence in big regional cities and towns is very important. We're broadcasting this podcast from Darlington. KPMG was founded in Darlington, and so was Barclays Bank, bizarrely. They're not actually here in Darlington now, KPMG, but they're in big cities in the north, and Barclays Bank still is. So the professional firms are a really important part of the economic fabric.
They are indeed. I mean, we are here to advise our clients as they start up, scale up, and internationalise their businesses, Grim. And whilst we have to have an international reach and perspective, certainly on areas such as tax and how to fund growth, of course, local businesses want advice from local advisors.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we've had a big announcement this week of the forthcoming spending review. It's happening a week, I think it's next week. We're going to hear how the government's going to divvy up its money. We've also had some announcements about investments in transport in the north of England today, Wednesday, and we've had the announcement of a defence review. Now, defence isn't something that normally we talk about a lot on this podcast, but there is an economic dimension to this, isn't there? Roy, you were in the university sector. Yes. If we're going to suddenly spend vast billions more on defence, how does that affect the research sector of the economy?
Well, let's go back a step. Often innovation is catalyzed within the defense sector. I mean, you've only got to go back to what happened actually pre the Second World War to see how there were dramatic changes in the way in which we did things as a consequence of defense being a requirement. Mm. Now, that said, what this is going to do is it's going to kickstart relationships that possibly have been bubbling along, but now we're going to boil. And that, to my mind, is the way in which innovation can work. This is more like disruptive innovation rather than incremental innovation. It's not a slow burn. We've got a lot to do in a very few set of years, if you like, between now and when we need to be well kitted out and well ready to defend the UK and indeed NATO through the UK.
I mean, it's a brutally awful thing to think that it takes aggression and war to stimulate innovation, but it is, I suppose, a fact of life. And there are celebrated things that have come out of this kind of innovation in defence. The sat nav in all our cars has come out of the.
Well, look at the gyros. Look at the gyros that are in drones today. About 15 years ago, a gyro in a typical drone that you would just put up in the sky would cost around $200,000. Now it costs about 10. And that's a consequence of a focus in the defense sector on the development of great technology that relates to gyroscopes and there.
And there are different types of defense. There's the aggressive defense, and there's also passive defense. So there's a company, it's a client of Recognition, Cromec, it's a university spin out. Yeah. It is a company in Sedgefield which produces radioactive detection.
Yeah.
And that's a passive defense. You know what's happening and you can react.
Now, Carl can talk to this a little bit more than me, but the Northeast is not in a bad place from the point of view of this expenditure on defence. In order to develop a really powerful sectoral effect on the economy in a region like the Northeast, you need four things. You need a cluster, you need a network, you need great finance, and you need research commercialization coming out of your universities. Now, we're actually in a pretty decent place. We're not a huge cluster, but we've got those four things. In fact, I've just noticed that Cromec and Leonardo are involved in a cluster network with defense and security. That's a good thing. So we'll not be big, but we will be perfectly formed.
I'm going to bring Christina in. Now, your practice, as you said at the beginning, spans all sorts of different sectors. You're not in the Northeast, but Yorkshire. Where do you see opportunities in this defence review for commerce?
I think there's a lot of opportunity. I think my understanding is that they want to spread the work across the country. It won't be kind of centralised in the South, which is really good news. So I see there being opportunities across the North for it, to be honest.
We missed the first bit of your answer, but we got the full gist of it there, Christine. Carl, on this point?
I think that, for me, what we have in the Northeast is some significant universities with great innovation. We have funding locally, whether it be in the form of the regional funds, whether it be in the form of private equity, to actually fund significant innovation and growth in these businesses. And absolutely, I believe that these businesses will innovate to improve our defences. And don't forget, you know, we've talked about preventive and detective defence. And we've talked about physicality when it comes to defence, but a lot of it will be technological defences.
Yeah.
And likewise, you know, I think we have a huge amount of opportunity in this region, which we are capitalising on.
Yeah.
Christina, there's other elements of warfare and aggression that are going on, particularly cyber and economic warfare, and the need to have an advanced economy and lever in AI and proper cyber security. What kind of things have your consultancy been looking at? Is it something that's a common theme that comes up from your clients?
Yeah, it absolutely is. As you would expect, given some of the publicity we've seen over the last few weeks around businesses like M&S, and actually I think we are constantly innovating and developing, and we do it in a way where we think about what are the practical things that businesses can do which are appropriate to the size and scale. And that's where when you're looking at northern businesses, where you've got a massive spectrum from really tiny businesses with very little to invest through to the larger entities, it's about trying to make things as accessible as possible for all the businesses, for including the ones that potentially don't have so much capital to start with. But yeah, it's almost every client that we're talking to at the moment is asking us about cyber and how best to protect themselves.
Roy, chip in on this.
Just the defense requirements are so broad, but of course, much of it depends on data. And at the University of Newcastle, there's the National Innovation Centre for Data. And I suspect that, although I don't know, that Paul Watson, who runs the National Innovation Centre for Data at Newcastle, will be all over some of the questions that will relate to the use of data in the context of cybersecurity and indeed cyber warfare, as well as the data that comes from some of the hardware that will typically be used in warfare nowadays. So there's a lot of stuff that would come together, and that's why the networks are so important, by the way.
Clustering and networking, collaborating, very important.
Yeah.
Although the saying that, you know, what was it, when people in the same business come together, customer beware, perhaps when it's the customer is the country, maybe not.
Well, maybe not. It's interesting, actually, Graeme. You know, go back a few years, and The automotive sector was established in the Northeast, but what we didn't have was an automotive alliance, a set of companies that came together to share their opportunities and their issues, frankly. When that was established, it started slowly, but in the end, it's been accessing funding and it's been accessing research opportunities that I suspect have helped enormously in pinning down the Northeast as a place to be for everything automotive, including the batteries and the...
Absolutely. And long may it be the case. There's trouble in the sector now, though, isn't there?
Well, there is, but maybe we can go back to defence. With the establishment of a small, highly focused cluster, with networks, with good funding from somewhere, national, international or regional, then in the end, we may get somewhere. There are only 900 jobs that are in this sector currently in the Northeast, but they're very highly paid jobs. We need a lot more of those highly paid jobs, and defence may be the place we can get them.
Right. I just wanted, before we go into other areas of our discussion, tell everyone about this National Centre for Universities and Business. What does it do? How does it operate?
Okay. The National Centre for Universities and Business has been in existence for many years, and it's a membership organisation. It currently has about 105 of our universities involved. And indeed, there are four vice chancellors on the board. The chair is Sam Laidlaw, who used to be the CEO of Centrica. And indeed, currently, in fact, is the CEO of a defence company. The board also includes significant businesses. And we work together to strategically convene universities and big business to discuss issues that relate to both sides, if you like. Because that relationship, if you think about it, it's not obvious where the two groups talk together. And that's what the National Centre for Universities...
Can I ask Christina, what is your take on this? Do you feel that the universities are ahead of the curve in their research, or are they taking their research cues from business, who might have stumbled upon the things because they become a necessity? You know, if you look at technological things like robots, you've got in America Elon Musk with his Optimus, but Boston Dynamics straight out of MIT. So which comes first? What's your experience of this?
To be honest, I've seen both sides to it. I think we try to work with the local universities and probably not so much the kind of large scale robotics side of things, but in terms of thinking about what skills we need to be able to deliver in the future and working with the universities to make sure that we've got the right courses going on to get the students the right skill sets that are going to be fit for employment when they, as soon as they graduate. And that's very much driven by business, which is driven by our customer demand, essentially. We do see it working that way around, which is brilliant.
Do you think universities, Christina, this is to you, need to adapt and change a little bit to give businesses and the students a little bit of a more cost-effective solution? Is the 3-year stroke 4-year course the right approach? Now, I asked that question for a good reason. It didn't actually come from me. I was talking to a member of my team who took a technical course and did it over 3 years, ended up with 3 years fee to pay, but did feel that he was twiddling his thumbs a bit in the long holidays and so on, and it could have been delivered cheaper over 2 years. Now, it seemed to me that that was a valid point, and it would have got him into the workplace quicker and with less debt.
Yeah. I think there's lots of opportunities. Sorry, Christina.
No, you go.
There are massive opportunities to optimise the way in which skills are delivered through universities. Accredited courses at 2 years, probably down the road, they'll exist and they'll grow. Just as degree apprenticeships have grown, by the way, which is a wonderful way of getting people into business and without debt.
Absolutely.
And there's no reason that course can't be called a degree of the same quantity of learning has been undertaken.
Correct. Going back to NCUB, the kind of relationship that I'm talking about is the strategic relationship that exists between business and universities, where research is used to help businesses innovate, either through the use of university capabilities to look at novel things that wouldn't typically be used on the day-to-day business, but equally, and more and more, for universities to solve problems which exist day-to-day in small and medium-sized businesses.
Yeah.
These two demands are actually a bit different. One is upstream strategic, the other one is short-term problem-solving.
And they can coexist with business, but the university can get something out of it that benefits the students as well, and that is income.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the students themselves need to see where their skills can be used and how their skills can be applied. And so the relationships that exist between businesses, and I've got to say, the relationships that now exist in our universities here in the Northeast compared with how they were 15 or 20 years ago, it's been a sea change.
Mm.
There is a much more open and leaning forward relationship between our university sector and our business community. That's my observation.
I think that's right. There's definitely more to be done because I think there is some phenomenal ideas and a lot of innovation sitting within universities, but because perhaps certain academia don't understand business and don't know how to commercialize business opportunities, perhaps the potential isn't fully realized. Mm. So I do think... in business, it's important that we continue to spend time with universities creating spin-outs that can stand up independently outside of an academic environment to become commercially viable businesses, but not to be consumed only by corporates.
Yeah, okay. That was the Northern Accelerator principle.
Exactly.
Christina, I don't want to be left out, and I do want to give you a Yorkshire, a Northern dimension, not just a Northeast dimension. So on this, before we go on to the general economy, which I want to talk about in a minute, what is your view? What are you observing about these relationships between universities and business?
I think I'd echo what the guys have said, that there's it's certainly... moved on leaps and bounds from where it was, but I think there's more to go. I think the ability to work together to craft what are the right courses, through from what students are learning when they're there as undergraduates or apprentices or whatever it is, through to the kind of the programs and the research and the things that can be commercialized, and how can we get those commercialized more quickly. I think there's always more we can do in that space.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you all for a view about the economy where it is. I'll just sort of set sort of the pros and cons as we've had it in the last couple of days. In recent days, we've had things like some good stuff. We had growth going up. We've had inflation, though, also going up. We've had government debt going up, therefore interest rates a little bit down, but not as down as maybe they could have been. We've got in my experience in the workplace, and I keep speaking to people in business, a slow economy where it's difficult to land clients. There's a long lead time. There's a lag in actually winning work, project-based work or retain-based work. But on the other hand, we have Lloyd's Business Barometer saying that the economy of the North generally is doing pretty well. The Northeast economy confidence has risen to 65%. The optimism indicator in Yorkshire and Humber, 52%. The national average is around 50%. Top growth priorities for businesses, according to Lloyd's, investing in their team. 54% see future investment, introducing new technology, 47%, and entering new markets, 39%. But profits are coming down as taxes erode them. So there we are. There's a little bit of a hodgepodge of things that are out there. What do you see in your day-to-day work? And I want to ask you, just give you an observation, real-life observation of where the economy is. Carl first.
Sure. You've said a lot in there, Grim, and I think that the three things I would point to are, I think for sure there has been, for the last 12 to 18 months, a high degree of uncertainty, caution, and anxiety.
Yes.
And I think a lot of that has stemmed from high inflation. As a consequence, people have less residual income to spend. And of course, we're seeing that now on the high street. We're seeing that now in the hospitality sector. And of course, because of an increase in things like minimum wage or living wage, as it's called now, because of an increase in employer national insurance contributions, actually the person on the street has less money. So as a consequence, I do think that economically we are in a very uncertain time. And I think that that will be the case for the next 12 months. Obviously, there's always two sides to every coin. And actually, certain of our clients, perhaps those sitting within the technology sector, those perhaps sitting in certain areas of professional services, they are performing well. But I think broadly, I do think that people are feeling the pinch. Certainly, you know, the person on the street, if you will.
My observation is that people in business want to do everything right. Actually, the data isn't brilliant, but I'd been in business nearly 40 years. I remember interest rates at 17%. I remember it being harder.
Yes.
But there's a greater fear from younger entrepreneurs, particularly on investment. What about you, Christina? What's your observation? You talk to big companies. What's your general feedback?
Yeah, I think similarly, you said the exact words that it's companies are much more resistant to invest, but that's sort of countered by there's a lot more pressure to invest and to innovate. So I think, you know, 3-4 years ago, we as a technology business, we'd be talking to the chief tech officers, the CDOs as well. Now we're talking to the CFOs and the CEOs, and every investment's got to have a really clear return aligned to it. We're doing things much more incrementally rather than going the big bang. And actually, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because it means that when companies are investing, they're more likely to be getting the right results from it. But it does make things feel a little bit slower.
Roy, I suspect you've got a bit more optimism. Am I right? Maybe I'm not.
No,
I might just try and give it a lip.
You're not really. But I'm going to give a bit of perspective, which is not the sort of immediate perspective of business as it is today. The question is our economy going to be in a position that grows prosperity? Okay, that's the fundamental question. Is it going to be in a position that grows prosperity? And my opinion is that without some significant disruption from the government in terms of actually loosening some of the purse strings, then it's not going to change. And I say that rather sadly, by the way, through Northeast lenses. The Northeast has fewer businesses per 10,000.
Yeah.
It always has.
Yeah.
And nothing we've done in the past 20 years really has moved that needle. So the question is for government, not what is happening today or what they're doing today, but what disruptively can they change in that context? For example, R&D tax credits for the for regions. Why don't we do it regionally?
Yeah, absolutely.
EIS support in regions where we provide
tax incentives,
For investors.
And that can be extended to VAT, certainly for the hospital.
Also, in that context, why wouldn't they be? Why wouldn't they do that in the context of university spin-outs, for example?
Agree.
Very, very easy to identify and relatively straightforward to do. What about tax incentives for businesses that grow from universities in the north to stay in the north?
Yeah.
Now, there's not a, none of that on the radar. And so my view is that while there are some economic ups and downs, the fact is that we're not going to make a step change in prosperity for some of the regions that they're talking about most. And by the way, the transport initiatives they've talked about today are in those regions.
Yeah.
They're not going to make those changes that I think will significantly change prosperity for ordinary people.
Well, interestingly, you talk
about... That's my opinion.
But you talk about some of the tax changes that could be introduced. In fact, the tax changes that have been introduced will achieve the opposite. So increasing main rate capital gains tax, removing entrepreneurs' relief, or at least increasing it from 10% to 18%, will simply reduce the number of privately owned businesses in the UK. So I'm afraid, as you say, I think, Graham, the optimism that you seek, I don't think we share in the short.
Well, I think I'm going to end, and Christina, you might, I'm sorry to go to good call on this. You service and look after large firms, I think, but and my own firm, small and medium-sized clients, and you, of course, are looking at micro firms when you're looking at university spin-outs. But Carl... I saw him on stage yesterday, or Monday, I beg your pardon, in the north of England at the UK Startup Week events, because UK Startup Week is this week, and it's based in the northeast. The UK government has put it up here. And you were interviewing people about their businesses.
Indeed.
And there was a lot of optimism.
There was.
I don't think it was sort of starry-eyed. I think there was some realistic opportunities.
I agree. I mean, a lot of what we've talked about here relates to what the government are going to do when it comes to spending, when it comes to taxation. And with respect, we can do little to control that. So I think the reason for the optimism at UK Startup and Scale-Up Week, Graham, is because actually it was a room filled of entrepreneurs who are talking about how they will dictate their own future. And they are putting the government almost to one side in that regard, because perhaps the government won't be additive to their intentions, but a proper entrepreneur won't allow anything, including the government, to deter them from building a great business in this region. And of course, in the Northeast, we've got the skills. We've got the passion for business. We've got the transport links. We've got the infrastructure. And of course, we've got a significant amount of funding available to support businesses that are starting up and scaling up, Graham. And you talked earlier about interest rates. People do talk a lot about high interest rates, but the reality is, in relative terms, debt is cheap today.
Yeah.
If you compare it to where interest rates were, you know, 15 years back. So I think there's a lot to be excited about if you are running a privately owned business. But of course, I think the government could do more to support privately owned business.
At that event, which was a really good event, I met a woman entrepreneur who had a very interesting product. And it was a good day for her because she had an SEIS scheme, tax incentives to invest, and she persuaded me to invest five figures.
There you are.
So, and I saw that as opportunity for me because she had the passion and energy, and I felt that I was investing in the person as much as the product.
Well, that's right. Exactly.
And that was very interesting.
And you talk about the person that I interviewed on Monday.
Of course, it was Mark Davies
from Dragon's Den. And, you know, she said herself that she received lots of different pitches for investment and lots of business plans to appraise. And of course, she invests in the person first, the business second. So I do think, as you imply, Graham, there is a lot of opportunity. But I do think, you know, one has to be cautious as you seek opportunity in a market that does have a number of moving parts, which perhaps only the government can influence.
I'm going to let Christina have the last word, because you've been a slight disadvantage being down the line. And these guys are they've been northeast heavy. What about Yorkshire? Is some of this passion for entrepreneurism, you know, Yorkshire businessmen and women have got a great, there's more owner-managed businesses in Yorkshire than there are in the Northeast. It's got a great track record in creating thriving businesses. What do you sense is the sense of optimism in the Yorkshire area?
I think I'd probably talk less about optimism, more about determinism. I think we're a pretty determined bunch, and there is a lot of activity going on to bring investment to the region, and the degree of collaboration between people who even kind of theoretically commercially compete, people all on the same page in terms of trying to drive Yorkshire forward as a real hub, and particularly for technology, which for CGI is absolutely brilliant. I think there's certainly optimism that we can do more and build more.
Well, Christine, thank you. Roy, thank you. And Carl, keep those deals coming. That's it for the Northern Business Podcast. If you want to join us as a guest, get in touch via LinkedIn. We want to hear from you. Thanks to my podcast producer, Alex Dryden, and technical operator, Robin Campbell. Join us next time on the Northern Business Podcast.